Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but
yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're back at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We got a guest to join us today, Doug Fine, author of Too High to Fail, about the end of marijuana prohibition, the legalization of cannabis, both as both for smoking and for industrial use. We are awaiting Doug Fine's call right now, so I want to catch us up to date on the nuke stuff to begin with.
I'm here, actually, by the way.
Oh, Doug, you're here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, you're not too hard.
Go ahead, go do the nukes, whatever.
You're not too high to miss the show.
No.
That's good.
No,
and no. You're not too high to fail either. So I do want to, or you are too high to fail. I got to get that right. I do want to, before I jump in here, Doug, as our listeners know, I do a lot of nuclear stuff. And I posted this week an article that I have to say completely blew me. Actually, I posted it last week. I talked a short bit about it with Winona Howder, my guest last week. And I just want to point out that this story I have seen nowhere else in the major media, or in the minor media for that matter. A study was released February 18th in Japan, in Fukushima. And I'm waiting for some public reaction to this. It says that with data up to January 21st, 2013, that 44.2% of 94,975 children sampled in the Fukushima area have thyroid abnormalities. 44.2% of 94,000 children, that's roughly 40,000 children around Fukushima, have thyroid abnormalities. I mean, to me, this should be world news. This should be all over every newspaper in the world. You know, you've got people running around saying, oh, Fukushima, no big deal. We actually have a guy whose work I generally respect, George Monbiot, who is in Great Britain and writes a lot about global warming. He's actually very good on global warming. Went to Fukushima and looked around and said that Fukushima convinced him to be for nuclear power. I mean, come on, 94,000 children is a huge sample for any kind of epidemiological study, 44.2% with thyroid abnormalities. This is not yet 2 years. We have one more week before the second anniversary of the catastrophe at Fukushima, and we already have 40,000 children that we know have thyroid abnormalities. That means that their lives are horribly compromised. Many of them will die from cancer. Many of them will lose their thyroids and be on pills or whatever, however else you do, you survive with a thyroid abnormality. And so I want to open with that today. We talked about it last week with Ona Howder. I'm waiting with bated breath to see somebody do a story on it. I know I will put out a piece for next Monday, which is a week from today, the anniversary of the Fukushima disaster. And so keep your eyes open, ladies and gentlemen. See if anybody, anywhere in the media picks up. And this is not some kind of fly-by-night study. This is this was done by the Fukushima Prefecture Health Management Survey, for God's sakes, run by the Fukushima Prefectural Government. And also, that government has also announced that two teenagers near Fukushima were diagnosed with thyroid cancer already. You know, they've already undergone surgery. Cancer should take a long time to gestate. This is not cool. This is not a great thing. So I wanted to point that out. Give us kind of an upbeat beginning to the show here. Doug Fine, it's an honor to have you on board. Thanks for joining us today.
Delighted to be with you, Harvey. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Now, you're the author of this book, which I have perused at least the first chapter. You're quite a good writer.
Thank you.
I guess you're not too high to write. you're just probably just high enough to write. So first of all, tell us about yourself, and then tell us about this book. You've written a number of other books, and we'll get to them towards the end of the show, but I have done many shows, and I will continue to do many shows on marijuana and cannabis prohibition. It's not just marijuana, it's industrial hemp, amazingly enough, that is prohibited in this country. I know you're in Northern California, so give us a bit of your background. Tell us where you are and then why you wrote this book, please.
Sure. Well, actually, I'm in New Mexico. I live on the Funky Butte Ranch, a place that I wrote about in my previous book called Farewell My Subaru, which was about getting petroleum out of my life. And for the next book, I decided to write about the drug war because a retiring neighbor of mine, and I live remote. I mean, I'm dealing with mountain lions eating my chickens lately.
Did you live exactly?
In New Mexico.
Oh, I thought you were in Northern California, because you have this great scene, which I'm going to want you to read something of. I hope you have your book with you.
Yeah,
I want
sure.
you to read that scene of the birthday party for the sheriff in Mendocino. But go ahead and tell us again where you are. You're in
yeah.
New Mexico.
Yeah, the incident I'm about to tell you about is what caused me to relocate to Northern California for a growing season where cannabis is legal to extrapolate the value to the American economy and American public health. Of ending the drug war, America's longest war, with a trillion taxpayer dollars spent to almost no effect. So,
a lot of effect on, a horrible effect on our society as a whole, and certainly on a lot of people that they put in prison, but we can talk about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, although if you're really looking at it from a bottom line standard, it also creates a 9,000 person drug fighting economy. And so we're basically also going to say, you know, sorry, thousands of DEA employees and agents, you're fired. Or better yet, we could greatly reduce the $35 billion that we taxpayers pay every year to this, counterproductive and terrible war. We could redirect that and send DEA agents to go after, for instance, prescription pill mill purveyors and deal with America's real drug problem, but we don't need anything like $35 billion going into this, of course. Anyway, so we all know this, actually. Americans have long been polling that they believe the drug war is a failure. But what prompted me to write about it was my nearest neighbor, not close enough to call next door neighbor. I usually wake up, the hummingbird wings and the alarm clock. It's so quiet. The hummingbird wings in the theater is my alarm clock. One day, it's the final scene out of the movie Goodfellas. There's helicopters and planes coming in, and my next-door neighbor is being raided. He's a retiree, AARP member, self-medicating just prior to New Mexico, subsequently started a very successful medical cannabis program. He gets raided Goodfellas style, hauled off to jail for, you know, a few seconds until his lawyer handled things. And millions of taxpayer dollars were spent that day for nothing. Concurrently not being raided by this sort of interagency squad that came and put my family in danger with automatic weapons was the mayor of Columbus, New Mexico, a very sleepy town since Pancho Villa invaded in 1916. The mayor there was a card-carrying member of Zeta cartel, supplying guns, American guns, south of the border to foster the war that's killed 40,000 more Mexicans in the last few years. That wasn't what was going prosecuted. He kind of got caught in a fluke later and is now in prison. But when that all came together, I said, okay, this has to be the next book, but I'm not someone who likes to whine about problems. We all know the drug war is bad. I wanted to look at solutions, and that is what got me, Harvey, to Northern California to write Too High to Fail.
So are you in Northern California now?
No. I'm finished with that project, on to the next one, back on my ranch in New Mexico.
All right. Now, tell us what you learned in Northern California. Why Northern California is such a big deal here?
I chose Mendocino County because it decided that it was going to be a test case for what a drug peace economy would look like. It's no surprise Mendocino County made that decision. For one thing, it was the first county to ban genetically modified organisms in the nation by popular vote. It's got the right climate, but it also has the right economy. 80% of the economy. It's a $6 billion local economy in Mendocino County annually. Cannabis, the number one, I'm talking about, of course, the number one legal crop in Mendocino County, federally legal, sorry, because it is locally legal. Federally legal crop is grapes at $74 million. So if you're a young 4-H farmer with a green thumb, which one are you going to choose? So the sheriff...
How many millions of dollars tied up in marijuana in Mendocino County?
$6 billion wholesale to farmers. And I can tell you how I came by.
$6 billion in one county?
Yeah, and it's on paper it's one of California's poorest counties. But it's interesting how I came by that number. In 2010, combined law enforcement marijuana plant seizures, cannabis plant seizures in Mendocino County totaled 600,000 plants. And I made a fairly conservative estimate that each seized plant or each plant grown in the county could average 1 pound of harvested flowers. That's what the product is today, is the buds, the flower buds. 1 pound. I've seen 10-pound plants up there in the course of my research, but I'm saying 1 pound per plant at only $1,000 wholesale price, which is also historically low. It got nearly that low. It got about $1,500 for a little while, thanks to federal raids that we'll talk about later on. That only supported the black market, of course. That's why we had Al Capone. The prices are way higher. So I estimated historically low prices of $1,000. Law enforcement said those 600,000 seized plants represented 10% of the crop, which is most farmers will laugh at. They say it's way, way lower than that. But let's be generous and say that that left 6 million unseized plants at $1,000 a plant. One pound of $1,000. That's the $6 billion.
What did the cops do with this $6 billion seizure of illegal marijuana here? Did they smoke it? I mean, or they burn it?
They didn't seize $6 billion. $6 billion is the value of the economy to the farmers.
Oh, okay. All right.
Seizure is a big issue, though. That's a whole other reason the drug war is terrible. But we could spend hours talking about why the drug war is terrible. What was beautiful about Mendocino is the sheriff said, he's a local boy, the sheriff, and he said, that this is ridiculous. You're cutting my budget, he said to the Board of Supervisors, which runs counties in California. We haven't hired extra deputies in this county since 1972. You're asking me to cut, 18% of my force. That's a public safety emergency. Let's just acknowledge the T-Rex in the room and issue zip ties, yellow bracelets. It's a very innovative idea. They're a very well-written ordinance. They're zip tie ordinance. Put it around every permitted plant, up to 99 per farm for every legal cannabis farmer. And I predict we'll raise $500,000 in this first year from farmers who are ready to be above-ground taxpayers. Guess what? They raised $600,000. He saved the 7 deputy jobs and handed the county an extra $100,000. It was a total, total success, and that's basically what Too High to Fail is about.
So did you have people in Mendocino County putting up T-shirts that said, I'm a 99er? maybe they should change the name of the football team from the 49ers to the 99ers.
That would be good, and I'll tell you, though, it is and remains a brave gesture, the farmers who did come up on board, because, yes, they were public. They had giant banners with a unique identification number on their fenced-in, code-complying farms, so that the helicopters, which are the summer soundtrack in the Emerald Triangle in cannabis-growing country in Northern California, the helicopters, as long as they were federal, state and local helicopters, avoided raiding those farms. Now the feds, unfortunately, had a different mode. But the really important thing is, forget about the idiotic federal policy. The feds are still harassing today the Mendocino program, subpoenaing all the financial records, and the county's fighting it. This is a tax creating, job creating, public safety increasing program that the feds are going after. Like my senior neighbor for his 11 plants or whatever he had. They're not going after the criminals. They're going after the law-abiding people. It's a horrible, horrible thing. But let's look at the good side. the guy who ran the program for Mendocino County was the sheriff's kind of right-hand man. Today, he's a captain. He's promoted from sergeant. Randy Johnson, not the baseball pitcher. And that's the passage that you were referring to earlier in the book when the growers all sang happy birthday to him, this guy who 3 years older, 3 years earlier, he told me, the only thing he knew about cannabis was if he found it on you, he took it and threw you in jail and brought it to the evidence room.
Well, here, read that quote. You got a direct quote here from Sergeant Randy Johnson in 2011 here.
I'm going to have to find the page here.
All right, two years ago I found you with cannabis, you went to jail. Today I see you're just more farmers in our community, like I see at the farmer's market with my wife on Saturdays. What, do they sell pot at the farmer's market in Mendocino?
They sure smoke. You know, there's no more stigma associated with using cannabis in Mendocino County than there is with drinking a wine at a Manhattan cocktail party, that's for sure.
Cool. And do people like drive off cliffs and go crazy and have reefer madness, or are people still normal up there in Mendocino?
Well, I don't see why they wouldn't be normal. I mean, the analogy to drinking would be saying in Napa Valley, where there's alcohol tourism and a lot of wineries, you know, is everybody falling down drunk on the street all the time? I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just part of life up there, as has been part of human life for thousands of years. I mean, abuse and addiction is a separate issue, and in fact, I believe, because when I debate drug warriors now, I'm often, you know, going head-to-head on MSNBC with some former drug czar guy who's basically a paid liar with our taxpayer money. When I have to go, the last vestiges here is the drug wars, Berlin Wall falls with Colorado and Washington's legalization. The last sort of thing that they come at you with is, oh, the children are all going to be smoking joints as they go to kindergarten, and, you know, it's this terrible addiction, the use is going to go up, and everyone's going to be a heroin addict if we legalize cannabis. And the truth and the facts and the studies are, as common sense would dictate, not indicating that as well. It is, in fact, prohibition that causes a good deal of those problems.
Well, it was interesting. I recently saw, and I can't remember what show it was, that somebody, either in Colorado or Washington, because they were openly dealing with pot, nobody was, you know, like handling it with hazmat gloves. The cops had an experiment, and they took three normal people, but they were potheads, and got them stoned, totally stoned, and then put them on a driving course.
Yeah.
And they actually didn't do too bad. They did drive a little more slowly than normal, but by and large, the cops said that they didn't think that, based on this, they didn't think that even people driving under the influence of pot was a major problem.
I'm glad that you mentioned that because, you know, first of all, I'm a father, and I don't think it's an effective talking point for me to in a media interview to say this piece of information, which is in fact the truth, that I've read multiple studies recently that confirm what you're saying, which is that the authors of the report are so surprised by the fact that cannabis use, especially among experienced cannabis users, doesn't cause detrimental driving habits, that bad driving statistics are bad things to happen. They're so surprised that they have to offer this very subjective kind of thing at the beginning of their studies to get it in legitimate journals, which is like, we need to just tell you that our only explanation we can think of for what the data are showing in this study is that people that are using cannabis are aware that they're breaking, laws and therefore are being extra careful.
Well, I don't smoke pot because it gives me a headache and it makes me paranoid. In other words, it reminds me of George W. Bush. But I was at a party once in Boulder, and somebody stuck a good friend of mine stuck a hash pipe in my mouth, and I got completely wrecked. And I had to drive home, and I was driving home, and I'm not that familiar with where I was, and I was going 10 miles an hour. And, they pulled me over, and the cop says, hey, you know, you're going 10 miles an hour. I said, well, yeah, what's the problem? And they made me walk the line, which, you know, I said, oh, wow, a few times, and I was 40 years older than the cop, so they didn't really bother me. But I do tend to think that probably people who drive on marijuana do tend to drive a little more slowly than the joke is if pot is legalized everywhere, they'll have to lower the minimum speed limit or raise it. But anyway, so in terms of Mendocino County, what's the situation there now?
Well,
I mean, they were busting people in 2010, right?
Yeah, yeah. I want to tell you what Randy Johnson, the coordinator of the ZipTie program we were talking about, the cannabis permitting program, said was the real benefit of the program.
Please.
By the way, what you're describing on driving slowly and having trouble in your own experience is sort of jives if you look at it from a Chinese medicine herbal perspective, which is the word for cannabis in Chinese is ma, and a Chinese medical practitioner, that is the most legitimate person in China, you know what I mean? This is not a hippie of China. We'll tell you they use cannabis for midwifery, for Asian labor births. It's no big deal. And when you use the sort of mentality of herbal medicine, what you're describing makes total sense because your body is not really acclimated to that herb. You know, you weren't one of those people whose driving isn't affected by it. But I guess slow is better than fast as long as people are paying attention.
Right.
But,
well, now here's a quick question. You say the Chinese word for cannabis is ma?
Yeah.
So is that what they call mahjong? Is that a game you play while you're stoned?
God, I don't know. Probably, you know how Chinese is. There's probably 14 different ma.
Yeah, that's true.
But, back to Mendocino.
So Mendocino, the ZipTie program, how much do you pay for a ZipTie?
The farmer pays what amounted to $8,000 in permitting fees that included fees to the county, and that's if they had the full 99 plants chosen to respect the federal government conspiracy limit of 100 plants, by the way. That's why they chose 99 plants.
Uh-huh.
So the crop could be worth to your nonprofit collective or cooperative, which is the way the medical cannabis law is set up in California currently, even though full legalization is coming. Everyone knows it. The crop could be worth, let's say, $500,000 in a perfect season with a great growing, no raids, no problems, no pests, no bad weather. So you're paying, you know, it worked for everybody. It was a relatively low, critics in the county called it a protection racket, you know what I mean? But why Randy Johnson felt that it was such a valuable program was not the $600,000 raised by the county and the 7 deputy sheriff jobs saved. It was that he said in his 20-something years of law enforcement, he was getting tips for the first time and calls. People could call when there was a home invasion, which is common, by the way, during Prohibition at harvest time, domestic violence, crimes like that, where farmers, which are 80% of the economy in the county, couldn't participate above ground in the community, including in law enforcement, because if you've got a domestic violence situation and you call and they see plants, they might arrest you for the plants. But when it's the sheriff's department issuing the plants, it radically changed the public safety within the county for the better. In other words, in simple terms, Arkansas, Kentucky voters, when the drug war ends, America gets safer in addition to richer.
Excellent, excellent. We're talking with Doug Fine, author of Too High to Fail, published by Penguin Publishers. Is that right, Doug, published by Penguin?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, and you lived in Mendocino County. Did you go up there just for one season? How often do you go up there?
Yeah, I mean, I've visited several times since then, but I got there on Valentine's Day of 2011 and started meeting local farmers, networking, trying to see if there were people who would let me talk about their farming operation and follow them and name them, and stayed there for the 10-month growing season. And this is something that I want to plug to listeners because, again, I deeply believe that for responsible adult social use, that not only should it be legal, but there should be no stigma attached to it. You mentioned studies that have shown people actually get to be better drivers, but the reality is you can't arbitrarily set THC limits the way that you can for alcohol. We know if you have a certain blood alcohol limit, we accept that you're over the limit and shouldn't be driving, whereas with THC, it can stay in your blood for a month, but at most is psychoactive for a couple hours. Even you and in your story about the Boulder hash pipe, no doubt a couple hours later, we're fine. And so you might have tested positive in some sort of field surprise, you know, test 14 days later.
Well, I'll tell you, I got to admit to you, Doug, this stuff really screwed me up because I went and ate 6 brownies and I had a terrible stomachache. But it wasn't the marijuana.
Well, so
actually, I ate the last Twinkies in Boulder. That's what happened. So you went up there in what year to Mendocino?
2011. By the way, don't knock the munchies, Harvey. It's that's what makes chemo patients eat when they're on.
I know that. I know that. Of course, my initial experience, I did smoke for quite a few years, before giving it up. And in 1960, the winter of 67, I was in Berkeley, California, spending a great time, and I got stoned for the first time and listened to The Doors on headphones. Completely changed my life. And then, of course, it was the first time, I'm not sure exactly when, but it seems to me that it was the first time that a Safeway opened for 24 hours. And the big joke was you would go in there at 3 in the morning, and there would be all these potheads in the sweet section eating the cupcakes and all that other stuff, you know. Hey, man, I got to do this. But, you know, so that's the only drawback I've ever seen with marijuana. It is good for not only cancer patients, but for AIDS patients, for people. It's long been known as a medical treatment for glaucoma. There's not much doubt about that.
So, also, you know, what you were describing as listening to The Doors changing your life, I mean, let's assume that you really mean that. Let's say that it was really profound for you.
Well, yes, it was. I still remember the exact moment when my buddy Dave Burson, who's a saxophone player, he got me stoned, he laid me down on the floor, and then he put these headphones on my head, and the nanosecond that the headphones went on and Jim Morrison was singing "This Is the End," my life completely changed. I mean, that was like climbing Mount Everest, you know.
And so I want to say that too jives with an herbal view of herbal medicines, medicinal herbs, that depending on whether you're religious or not, you can say the earth gives or God gives or whatever, that you actually, some people are meant not to use some herbs. Some are meant to have herbs at a fairly regular basis in their lives for certain balancing things, and some are meant to have a particular relationship with a particular herb in a particular way for a certain time, and then be done with it. It's like a prescription that you don't want to necessarily be on forever. So, you know, that could be the way it is with you.
Yeah, it was. It played a great role in my life, as did LSD. I took LSD a half dozen times. I did mescaline a half dozen times, and that was it. Of course, you know, my line about LSD is you really only have to do LSD once. I mean, you know, if you do it, you've done it, and everybody who's done it knows what I'm talking about. We're talking to Doug Fine, author of Too High to Fail. Penguin Books spent the 10-month growing season, I guess it's 2 years ago, in Mendocino. That growing season about to start again, yeah?
That's right, yeah. It's last year, by the way, was the best vintage. I went up and gave a talk at the Emerald Cup in the Emerald Triangle up there. My shtick now is trying to talk to America, basically, and this includes educating Emerald Triangle farmers and other outdoor farmers, that just as many of us eat organic and healthy foods. In other words, we wouldn't consider going into a commercial big name supermarket and buying some GMO tomato. You know, we know about pesticides. We know about what healthy soil and healthy food is like. We want to shop at a farmer's market, a food co-op, or grow it ourselves, or belong to a community supported agriculture. So what I'm, as a sustainability journalist in general, I'm not a cannabis farmer, but what I'm doing now, having met all these cannabis farmers who do grow, sometimes third generation growers up there in Northern California, do grow outside, I need to caution America to make those same choices as the drug war ends, because, for instance, Colorado sounds like it's legal, but who knows if it'll stick, but their recommendation committee last week recommended banning outdoor farming, meaning you only have the option of chemicals and artificial light going on your cannabis, which would be like saying you can't have organic craft beer. You can only drink Coors.
Well, let's talk about that, Doug Fine. We've got to take a break here. We're going to hear the Solartopia song in a moment and take a break. But it seems like what you're saying is that when marijuana is legal, which is certainly going to be, and I want to talk about the timetable with you, don't buy it at Walmart. You know, I just learned that a third of all the groceries that are purchased in the United States are bought at Walmart. I hope that doesn't become true of marijuana, too. We'll be back in a moment with Doug Fine, author of Too High to Fail.
Cold plants, new plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam.
Good buddy, Dana Lyons, famed Cows with Guns singers. I think that Cows with Guns is over 2 million hits as a YouTube, the vegetarian anthem. singing the Solartopia song for us at, in his own inimitable fashion. That's Dana Lyons, my great buddy. We're talking to a really good guest here, Doug Fine. I gotta say, Doug Fine, author of, Too High to Fail, issued by Penguin Books. I gotta say, you know, I've done many, many shows on marijuana. One of the reasons is I want to do a lot of shows on it before it's legal. Because once it's legal, who's gonna care and who's gonna remember? Doug, you spent the growing season in, 2 years ago in, Mendocino County, a county starting to, rise again, well, it's the plant again. And you're about to tell us, what you do, and tell us, how you think this, why will this growing season be different from all others, the season of 2013 in Mendocino County?
Well, I mean, everyone is unique. For one reason, when you grow outdoors, you're really still in the 21st century at Mother Nature's whim, which is another reason I feel like we got to support outdoor cannabis farmers, because this indoor stuff is grown in 10 weeks instead of 10 months, and it's not good for you. You know, sometimes it's not possible to grow outdoors, but I thought if we had time, Harvey, I had a quick passage here that's my favorite from Too High to Fail.
Go for it, go for it. Yeah, so this is a verbatim passage from Too High to Fail. And before the break, you raised an interesting point. You know, that in Colorado, you're saying it's legal only if it's grown indoors?
That's one of the proposals that's coming forth.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's insane. Why would they do that?
You know, all I can think of is a line from Catch-22 where the Osarian says, in answer to that question, why do they do anything?
well, my favorite line from Catch-22 is, give me eat. Give everybody eat. It was Lieutenant Scheisskopf, I believe. But go ahead. Let's hear this passage.
To set it up, Mendocino County calls itself the bubble within the bubble within the bubble because it's progressive even by California and even by Northern California / Bay Area standards. If it were any more progressive, it would be clothing optional in the supermarket, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I looked the part of a Mendocino cannabis farmer, even though I wasn't one. I was just a Mendocino journalist studying cannabis farmers. And the moment that I bounced out of Mendocino County across the county line into Sonoma County in my vegetable oil-powered oversized truck and my beard, sirens started blowing, and I got pulled over under this billboard reading, ironically enough, grab some buds. I don't know if you are
in beer.
Yeah. For Budweiser, but Budweiser knows what they're talking about and who they're talking to as well. It was the San Francisco Giants taking the field was a picture, and it said, grab some Buds, and it basically said, you know, drink a Budweiser, smoke a bowl, and you can still be patriotic, rah, rah, go, apple pie, maybe several apple pies. And so, so I'm ironically and unconstitutionally, being searched, walked, and it's terrific for a guy researching a book who of course, didn't have any cannabis in the truck, not being a cannabis farmer, and walked into the back of this Sonoma County police car. And it was terrifying because, you know, in the Patriot Act era, I didn't know if I was going to disappear forever or what, and it was completely wrong what was happening there. Falsely say, one of the officers that came by said, we smelled cannabis coming out of your car. I'm like, Kung Pao chicken, maybe. It's vegetable oil powered.
Chicken and cannabis, I believe, are a well-known combination. That's probably why they pulled you over.
Yeah, right. That's very true. So I come back to Mendocino County after this incident and approach the biggest entrepreneur in Mendocino County, the poster child for doing it right. He wants to put the cartels out of business by becoming a respected taxpaying citizen. We'll talk maybe if we have time here about what happened to him later in that 2011 season. But I came back and I started sort of, I don't want to say whining, but I started griping to him about this constitutional problem I had under the grab some billboard sign. So here's the passage from Too High to Fail. Cole's response there in the drizzle was to blink. He kept blinking very occasionally. When I told him the part of the story where I found myself sitting in Deputy Londo's car wondering if Sonoma County's jails permit conjugal visits. If they were going to lie about smelling cannabis, what else would they lie about? I invaded with profound self-pity. When I finished, Cohen blinked three more times, I think it was, before he noticed that I seemed to expect some kind of reaction along the lines of, holy shit, how much in civil rights damages are you suing for? Instead, he checked that he didn't have to take an incoming cell phone call and then said evenly, dude, you're bumping in a big rambling truck across the Sonoma line. Let me guess, Bob Marley's blasting out of the speakers? was steel pulse, I corrected defensively. And my tires aren't as knobby or as jacked up as you generally see around here. I'd already noticed the perpetual monster truck show that passes for normal traffic in the Mendocino Hills. Of course you got profiled, Colin continued undeterred. Ever take a gander at yourself? You look like just another grower. I've got two delivery guys facing felony charges from running this stretch of the gauntlet right now, he shrugged. Cost of doing business. The gauntlet, I asked? Highway 101 from Sonoma County Line all the way to the Bay Area, where you're not in Kansas anymore. So this drug war game is something that Matt Cohen, the farmer that I, one of the farmers I was following closely, just lives with every day until cannabis prohibition ends.
Wow. That's amazing. I almost died in Mendocino, by the way. I was there in 1960-something, and I camped out. I assume there's still a cliff there, and I was camped out on the cliff. Camping is a euphemism. I was just in my sleeping bag. It started to rain, and I started to walk back into town, and I came within a foot of walking off this cliff. So I'm glad we're still, of course, if I had been smoking cannabis, who knows what would happen. But Mendocino now, I guess, has been totally transformed by the pot culture and the pot economy, right?
So the people that run Mendocino call themselves redneck hippies. They're the offspring of the traditional ranching, well, I shouldn't say traditional, traditional since the Native Americans are asked to move on, ranching families that became very cannabis friendly from returning Vietnam vets. And these people had camouflage and other types of secure aerial security down, and they kind of blended with the back of the landers who came for intentional communities. It's where the, I don't know if you know about the, what do they call it, the Whole Earth Catalog is from there. And,
well, yeah, unfortunately, he's gone pro-nuclear. I lived on a hippie farm from 1968 to 1984 in Massachusetts, so I know the culture well, believe me.
And yeah,
I've been in Mendocino County. It's a gorgeous, I mean, aside from all the other stuff, it is an absolutely gorgeous place.
It is. Yeah, it is. We had a really, really good time up there, my family and I should say. Had a really good time living there for a year.
So, oh, you took your family with you?
Yeah, yeah.
And your kids, did they go out and get stoned? I mean, as a parent, how did you relate to the marijuana stuff?
Well, my kids are young, so where it came into play was our explicit plan when we moved there, when we were, you know, checking Craigslist, which, by the way, has open, if you go to the Mendocino County Craigslist, you'll see open postings that say 215 friendly property. That's the proposition that made marijuana cannabis legal, medical cannabis legal in 1996 by voter initiative. And so you'll see 215 friendly or zip tie friendly, meaning if you want to rent this property, you make a deal with the owner and you can grow there, and you sign a notarized thing and you bring it to the sheriff and all that jazz. But so I was checking Craigslist for the opposite of that. I was trying to just find a cabin somewhere in the county where my family would be separate from what I was reporting for only one reason, and that is that on the federal level, the drug war still goes on, and I don't want guns and raids around my kids. And, you know, I've reported from Rwanda and plenty of much more dangerous places than Mendocino, although law enforcement guns were, besides the incident in Sonoma we talked about, were pointed at me when I went to cover, with a press pass, with press approval, a raid in a federal, on public land, my public land that I pay for in the National Forest. I was screamed at by a guy with automatic weapons coming after me during a raid there. But the deal was there was no separating work from real life in Mendocino County because cannabis is the economy of Mendocino County. We could not find the place where we were not surrounded by cannabis farms, and we just learned to live with it. But it was my sweetheart and I had plans for what to do in the event that there was some kind of address misunderstanding. When things started to get crazy at the end of the growing season, maybe that's a nice segue, the feds decided to shut down this unbelievably successful program. It was so successful it was going to spread all over the Emerald Triangle and Northern California counties in the 2012 season. It would have had thousands of participants raising millions of revenue for local economies while hurting illegal criminal cartels, especially south of the border criminal cartels. And creating an economy and a template for the post-drug war era. Instead, the Northern District of California U.S. Attorney's Office decided that what needed to be done was automatic weapons raids of people like Matt Cohen that we just talked about, who was separated from his wife for 8 hours, no access to attorney, while Days from Harvest, his locally permitted, he's a Chamber of Commerce member, some of the Sheriff's Department came to his birthday party, totally legitimate local business person, gets his 99 plants cut down days before harvest, depriving his 33 nonprofit co-op members of his Northstone Organics co-op from their medicine, including a liver cancer patient named Bill Harvey, that I interview in the book, whose lifeline was that medicine. So you're not just hurting the American, you're not just hurting the American economy. You're killing people by continuing the drug war going. You're hurting Americans' health. This was, organically grown. This guy's a total sustainable guy.
Now, anyway, is most of the marijuana grown in Mendocino? Is it grown organically?
Well, most of it is grown outdoors, and when it's outdoors, it's by nature much less pesticide demanding. Where there's lack of sustainability, I think, in outdoor growing, and I'm being kind here because I'm sure there are some farmers there who are in it just for the money and churning out buds and would use any artificial who knows what, like some farmers will. But most of the farmers I met with, and there are organic standards mandated by the zip type program and by the county.
The county requires you to grow organically?
Well, the provision in the ordinance calls for sustainability standards, and those are still being negotiated exactly what those are going to be. But there is a law on the books, for instance, banning genetically modified seed. Not that there's genetically modified cannabis yet, but the point being is it's a no-brainer for the county to enforce organic principles. There have been raids in Mendocino County carried out against people who grow Roundup Ready corn. So,
that's fantastic. I love it. Why don't they form a posse and arrest the jerks that run Monsanto, man? And then force them in the room and make them smoke pot. That would help. We're talking with Doug Fine, his book is Too High to Fail, Too High to Fail, from Penguin Books. That's astounding. I never heard that the county, any county, anywhere, any government arrested people for growing genetically modified crops. That's spectacular. I love that.
I don't know that they arrested anybody, but what the sheriff confirmed for me is that there was at least one raid carried out, I believe, by the drug squad in the county, of somebody reported GMO growing in the neighbor's field, and that who knows if it was actually a SWAT team coming in and doing what they did to Matt Cohen's cannabis farm and chopping it down and leaving, or if it was more of, hi, we're the cops, and this crop better be gone by tomorrow kind of thing. But, yeah, you're not allowed to grow genetically modified organisms in Mendocino County.
Well, I'm just waiting now for Monsanto to calm down a drone attack on Mendocino for that one.
They did send their industry group to try to fight the legality of the vote on that ordinance, just that they successfully squelched it statewide GMO labeling in California.
Yeah, we think that election was stolen, by the way. I think legitimately it passed, and Monsanto came in and jerked around the results, but...
It backfired in Mendocino County. It totally backfired. They came in and tried to disperse the name of some of the people that were behind the ordinance, and they were like super respected gazillionaire wine people, vintners and winery, that pillars of the community, mispronouncing their name in front of the judge and trying to besmirch their reputation. And the judge was like, "Yeah, that's my golf partner. He can get case.
We like that. Now, do people play golf on marijuana? I mean, that must be interesting.
Willie Nelson is big on that.
Willie Nelson plays stone golf?
Well, he does everything stone, and he's a big golfer.
Well, I've met Willie Nelson, man. He's like everybody's grandfather, and he is down. I went on this bus, actually, just for a banana second, and it was like going to a pop party. There's no doubt about that. So, Doug Fine, what do you think is going to happen this year in Mendocino County with the pot crop?
Well, right now Mendocino's big issue is that the feds have just, after all these raids, and then at the time when they raided Matt Cohen, they also threatened the Board of Supervisors with federal prosecution for criminal conspiracy if they didn't squelch the zip tie program. So the Mendocino County arguing that the Board of Supervisors arguing that they didn't have the resources to fight the federal government reluctantly killed the successful program and squelched it region-wide, even though it temporarily, I think it's going to be a nationwide model soon. But then, out of nowhere, a year later, they couldn't let sleeping dogs lie. It's one of these tactics that makes me wonder if deep down the federal government is really working for drug legalization and is really on our side deep down. Because when I tell the story, U.S. attorneys raiding at gunpoint people providing medicine to cancer patients, which is what Northstone Organics was doing, charging lower than market price value to their patients and delivering medicine to cancer patients is what they did. And so when people hear that, they're outraged. So a year later, they've basically badly hurt the program, and everybody's laying low despite the great horticultural growing season last year. It was a very good growing season in the year following the raise that we're talking about. But then they all of a sudden, late last year, issued a federal subpoena to a grand jury of all the financial records for the dormant program. Like, get over it already, right? And instead, it's rallied Mendocino, and they're saying, screw the cost. We are fighting the federal government. We're not going along with these permits. So I urge folks to follow that Mendocino situation. I'll always be talking about it on my website and my Twitter. You can find all that information at DougFine.com.
Well, how has legalization in Washington and Colorado affected the atmosphere in Mendocino County, or has it?
Well, you know, bigger picture, the Berlin Wall of the drug war is down. It's over. The floodgates are down. The real proof for me wasn't even Colorado or Washington. It was Arkansas. On no money and after tons of roadblocks by opponents were thrown up, Arkansans got to vote on medical cannabis last election.
And it passed, right?
It failed 52-48, which is better than California did on its first vote on the subject, better than Colorado did on its first vote on the subject. Arkansas people. So we're it's over. I just read a news article today that the Republican Party of California is considering changing its stance on the drug war to support an obvious conservative value of stopping this ridiculous incarceration economy, this welfare economy.
Here's a big question. Will legalization be on the ballot in California in 2014, I guess?
No. So this is the strategy. California's 2016. It looks like we may see 2014 in other places. A number of New England states, Oregon.
New York, I think.
That may be, and it's coming from all angles. So, yeah, it's done. The question of when, the real world is federal law needs to change. Cannabis needs to be removed from the Controlled Substances Act and allow states to regulate, like alcohol. States will do it differently. Utah does alcohol differently than Nevada does. By the way, none of this yet is talking about the industrial side of cannabis, which I'm currently just finishing a book on now. It's going to be out pretty soon. It is also, I think, going to be magnitude bigger of an economy than
hemp.
Social cannabis.
Yeah. Well, I've always argued that, once they're both legal, the market for hemp, industrial hemp, is going to dwarf the market for smoking marijuana. I mean, hemp's industrial uses, which we've known for 6,000 years, hemp was grown, of course, by George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. They loved hemp. There's correspondence between the two of them about hemp. Actually, I wrote a book called Passions of the Pot-Smoking Patriots, portraying George Washington as a gay pot smoker. There's tangible correspondence between the two about hemp. Do you agree? I mean, is hemp going to be bigger than marijuana?
Yeah, magnitude's bigger. My sort of metaphor on this one is Coors is big, but ExxonMobil is bigger. We're talking about energy applications. It's going to be vast.
Well, that's fine. We're running out of time. We do have a few more minutes, but I'm going to have you back to talk about hemp. We've barely gotten into that, and there's more things I want to talk to you about marijuana. So if you've got the time, we'll arrange in 2 or 3 weeks for you to come back.
I love
talking about pot on the radio. I mean, I just think it's just... It's so interesting because, and I think it's a huge issue. My cuckoo clock's going off here because so many people get thrown in jail. So much money has been wasted. And most of it, I think, in recent days, pot's been illegal, I guess, since 1935 or 36 in this country. But it was Richard Nixon who hated hippies. because you never got laid. I'm convinced 99% of people who hate hippies never got laid. That's the problem. And he's the one who really escalated the drug war, who even dragged in Elvis Presley, who I'm pretty sure did get laid, but Presley was a beer head as opposed to a pothead. But what is the initial take from Washington and Colorado? I mean, it's early yet, but what does it look like up there? Have you seen any tangible results?
Oh, yeah, and it's also creating a sea change on the federal level already. The rhetoric coming out of the White House has changed since the Colorado election for reasons that have to do, I believe, with voting percentages in that election. But I just want to say that your take of how you like to do these cannabis shows because once you want to get it in while it's still illegal because no one's going to talk about it after it's illegal,
right.
That, first of all, is proof of why the drug war needs to end, is because the crime and the BS and the underage access and all that stuff goes down when it's not news anymore, and that's why it's good to end the drug war. But it also echoes the wish of Sheriff Tom Holman, the Mendocino County Sheriff, who, you know, put his career on the line and became a hero among law enforcement and locally when the program was a success. He really, no one expected it to work, but it was the only option it was a desperation move short of laying off 7 deputy sheriffs, and he basically showed a model for how the drug war can end. He said his number one greatest wish as sheriff, his number one professional wish, is to get cannabis just off the front pages. He's like, we have big problems in this county. We have meth. We have domestic violence. The problems in this county are not about marijuana. It's not even in my top 10. And I'm sick of talking about it, and I want to just get it off the front pages. And that's, in the end, he said, why he went to deciding to permit and legitimize the county's far and away number one economy. As for the sea change of Colorado and Washington, yeah, I mean, I've been in Colorado since the election, and, you know, it's certainly different, but I think Colorado's making an effort. Colorado, there's some better things about Colorado than Washington's situation and some worse. What's worse is Colorado has a lame attorney general, a lame Republican attorney general. It's going, the state's getting much bluer, but there's just this guy who's trying, he doesn't like it. And so the officialdom is trying to throw wrenches in the program. Washington, on the other hand, has a very, very progressive implementation, but it's not a constitutional amendment. It's a legislation. And the vote had some bad elements there, including, as we were talking about earlier, arbitrary and I think very low THC levels in blood, which is a terrible precedent to set, needs to be removed because it has nothing to do with whether or not somebody's intoxicated or even indeed when they most recently used cannabis. Could have been a month earlier. So that needs to change on the Washington side. But what's happening differently out of the federal government now is at the highest levels, you know, attorney general type levels, you're hearing instead of the 40 years of lies, you're hearing, okay, well, we're having a debate. Let's have a debate. And so that's
well, maybe Barack Obama will finally remember the fact that he did smoke, and when he was running for president the first time, somebody asked him if he inhaled, and he said, well, that was the point. I want to, Doug, if you can come back in 2 weeks, I got a show next week on Fukushima. If you want to come back on in 2 weeks, we're hearing Pete Seeger, Usher's out there. Let me know. I want to talk about hemp with you and more on marijuana. We've been with Doug Fine, author of Too High to Fail, and now we're too high to keep going here because the show's over. This has been another Soiltopia Green Power and Wellness show. We'll be back next week to talk about Fukushima, and in 2 weeks with Doug Fine, if you got the time, Doug. Yeah, talk about him. All right?
Thanks a lot, Harvey.
All right, man. You too. Talk to you soon. Take care, and don't drive stoned.
So we went digging into the ground. It started to burn many things we found, but
don't you know we're gonna